Hello, and welcome to Creston Global's The International Entrepreneur Podcast. Your host, and today we're back with two new incredible guests to continue our discussions around the entrepreneurial mindset. As a quick side note, I do have a bit of a cold at the moment, so bear with if I start to get a little more gravelly than usual, but we'll crack on as is. If you've just joined us as a new listener, I'd recommend listening to episode one, part one, for some general housekeeping on how this podcast works. But in short, we'll be speaking with our new guests for two mini episodes, if you will. Our discussion will be split over a part one and a part two being released next week, to keep these sessions easily digestible for busy listeners. Anyway, let's get to it. I'm thrilled to introduce our episode two, Entrepreneurs. Representing Creston Global's Singapore arm, we have John McCarrion, founder both of the Expatland Global Network and of CST Global Tax Advisors, and Boon Tan, Managing Director of CST Tax Advisors Singapore. So, for a little bit of background, Creston Global is an international accountancy network that brings the best minds in business accountancy together. I think a great place to start, as we did with our previous guests, would be to hear how you got into accounting in the first place as a career, and what inspired you to become an accounting entrepreneur in your own right. Shall we start with you, John?
So I got into accounting because I had an uncle who worked for the United Nations, and he was head of the internal audit function, and he was telling me how he was always flying off to one exotic location or another to check out how the aid money the UN had given was being spent. So I got the idea that accountants lived glamorous lives and flew around the world. And I, from a young age, I thought I wanted to do that. So unlike some of my friends who fell into accounting, I always had this vision of being a chartered accountant who flew around the world. And I'm very pleased to say that's what's actually happened. So that's how I got into it.
So I got into accountancy because I wanted to help people, and I've always been I've always liked numbers growing up. So for me, becoming an accountant was a very logical profession for me, because it allowed me to help my clients manage their affairs by helping them with their numbers.
And to give listeners a little more of an idea about you as people and what makes you tick, we thought we'd ask an icebreaker question. And again, very generic one at that. It'll be the same with every set of guests that we have, if you don't mind humouring us. If you could have dinner with anyone in the world, past or present, who would it be and why?
Well, I think if I could have dinner with anyone in the world, have dinner with Pele, probably the greatest footballer of all time. So he's a hero of mine, and I love football, and he made it look so easy. So mine's pretty simple. It's Pele.
If I could have dinner with anyone alive or dead, my individual would be Michael Jordan. I'm a passionate basketball. Used to be a player, but more a fan at the moment. And, you know, apart from his exploits on the court, his business success off the court is something that I would love to have a chance to talk to him about as well.
So on to the meat of our podcast topic, which is that of the report Creston Global has very recently released and the findings of their global business culture research that it contains. Are there any stats or results in there that surprised you at all or stood out against your own personal experiences as entrepreneurs?
Well, my first impressions are it's quite accurate. It does capture the topic quite well. I think entrepreneurs and global business and what makes them move There's a multitude of reasons, but no, I think the white paper does a pretty good job of zeroing in on a lot of the things that entrepreneurs go through.
Yeah, from my perspective, having a business in a expat and internationally focused city, the themes and collective feedback of the people that were interviewed for the white paper absolutely resonated with me. And, you know, there were anecdotes and examples throughout the white paper, which I see on a daily basis with my client base and prospective clients.
So looking at the key findings of the white paper with regard to our region, Singapore and Southeast Asia, I think that the key findings are, for the most part, correct. I think I would say one of the things that struck me, supply chain issues, you know, post-COVID really have been more of the threat than the opportunity. So that was one of the key findings, particularly given what's been going on with shipping and container prices, and just getting access to goods has been a problem. So that's what I'd say about those findings.
And for me, looking at the findings, I found it particularly interesting of the fact I would agree that a lack of familiarity with the local issues are something that was definitely holding back entrepreneurs. You know, the thought of, well, it worked in this market, so it obviously should work in the other market, is not something that is really something you can look at as a rule of thumb today. I think each market certainly has their own characteristics and nuances that any entrepreneur or anyone looking to expand into this part of the world in particular needs to take time and careful consideration in understanding before taking the leap. I mean, considered, you know, business etiquette, expectation of communication, how quickly decisions are made, who makes the decisions, how many meetings do we need to have before we get to the person who will actually say yes or no. These things are, you know, things that you need to understand. And you certainly, if you're serious about entering a market, such as Southeast Asia, then you'd need to have advisors on the ground who are familiar and able to guide you and help you through that process.
Just jumping in there for a sec, also, I think the culture point in this part of the world is also impacted upon by the history and heritage of the country. So Singapore's heavily been influenced by the British, and so its way of doing business, generally, you know, common law, commonwealth, similar type institutions, may give somebody the impression that you can bring a British business practice to a Singapore, but then of course you'll find that you can't, because the mode of communicating and the way people speak and the way they interpret the message that's being given is totally different to the UK. And so if you go next door to Malaysia, which, you know, culturally, again, quite different from Singapore, similar institutions, but again, language, messaging, and, you know, what they will do when challenged, or what they will do when pushed as a leadership group, totally different again from what you might get in SW1. Look, nothing jumped out at me as something that I didn't agree with. I think it's hit. You know, there was, you know, seven or eight key findings that that were mentioned. I didn't take objection with any of them. I think if one I would comment upon would be I obviously don't agree that Western Europe and the US are key targets. I think, you know, Asia is, and for the foreseeable future, will be the market to be in and the growth engine of the world. And I think, if anything, the recent events have shown the fragility of the Western economy's supply chains and the cohesiveness of the market. But I think Asia is so sprawling and diverse, and they are far more, how shall I put it, less likely to get into conflict with each other, that it makes for a more harmonious place to do business. Singapore itself is the key launching pad in Southeast Asia, and I can't think of a better place to grow a market from. So if I was looking at a key target, it wouldn't be Western Europe or the US, to be frank. It would be Asia Pacific, which obviously includes the wonderful country of Australia, where we've got to throw that in.
Yeah, I totally agree with John. The market and the number of inquiries that we're seeing on a regular basis about companies wanting to set up in Singapore, and primarily because they believe it's a safe jurisdiction, stable jurisdiction, geographically is located in a fantastic spot. You know, you can get anywhere throughout Southeast Asia and Greater Asia. And if you were interested in expanding into Europe and the US, you know, likewise, the transportation hubs and mobility, ease of mobility is there. But certainly, based on what discussions I've had with prospective clients and clients that we have in the practice here in Singapore, there's certainly a focus away from the traditional Western markets of Europe and North America and the USA, primarily because of this lack of stability and the high levels of uncertainty in terms of simple things like banking. You know, how can we be sure that if I start entering agreements with this jurisdiction in the European Union that sanctions aren't going to be suddenly imposed overnight because the government makes some decision in relation to the Ukrainian conflict? So that kind of has made people more wary of where can we actually find sustainable growth, I think is the key, right? Obviously, those markets are new markets that they want to explore, but on stability and sustainability metrics, Southeast Asia and the Greater Asia region is certainly the focus for a lot of our clients.
And as we've mentioned before in previous episodes, a big part of Creston's research and subsequent report has been around this idea of an interpreneur, coined phrasing for international entrepreneur. And it would be great to hear what you all take the mindset of a successful interpreneur to be. What gives them that confidence to take that leap of faith, which, you know, if you're just starting out, can be quite intimidating to kind of hold fast to?
Well, I think that's a great question. And obviously, having set up the practice 30 years ago, most of my clients were small business people who were headed offshore. And I came to understand that they had certain key characteristics, many of which I have myself, that led them to take the leap. So I think, the entrepreneur is somebody who doesn't want to be constrained by their domestic market, who's up for a challenge, got a semi-irrational belief in their own abilities and is prepared to take the plunge. So for anyone who's watched tidal diving off the coasts of Acapulco, next time you watch it, you may want to pay attention to the fact that the time the guy jumps off the cliffs is when he can see nothing but rocks below, because he has confidence that the tide will come back in and the water will cover up the rocks and he'll be fine. So all the entrepreneurs out there are comfortable with that analogy because they've done it themselves. They've moved out of their comfort zone. So I think that's what we have in common. And certainly insofar as, you know, Expatland Global Network, we're now in 38 cities, growing strongly with Creston. I've had to cross a lot of cultures and go into a lot of unfamiliar environments and figure it out as I go along. And I think that's what entrepreneurs do, because if you're going to sit at home base and try and envisage every particular challenge that you might meet and then come up with an answer to it before you've left your shores, well, save yourself the trouble and go and watch some MASH reruns, because you'll have more fun.
Yeah, I think from a personal perspective, myself, having been born and raised in Sydney, I think my entrepreneur experience has been, you know, a lot more interesting than I had expected. You know, I mean, whilst I was born and raised in Australia, my family heritage is from Singapore, so I speak the local dialects of Mandarin and Hokkien. You know, my extended family and relatives are all residing in this part of the world. So for me, having 6 years ago landing in Singapore, I thought, well, this would be pretty easy, right? But, you know, it really made me realize that it's a very different culture and a different approach to business in this part of the world. And it's not just dealing with clients, but dealing with service providers on the ground. Okay, so a lawyer, as John mentioned before, Singapore, with the background of a, you know, British common law system, former colony of Britain, part of the Commonwealth. I thought, okay, well, given the heritage and native and language skills, this should be a breeze, but it certainly wasn't. But having said that, it certainly was something outside of my comfort zone and something that I needed to learn and adapt to. And 6 years later, you know, it's probably been one of the most fulfilling professional and personal experiences I've ever gone through. So entrepreneurs certainly have to be able to and do, obviously, have a spirit of passion for what they believe in, passion for what they're doing, and a belief in themselves in regards to building a business in a new jurisdiction, regardless of what barriers and hurdles may be put before them.
Look, I think learning from failure is essential. And if you don't learn from failure, you won't be an entrepreneur for very long. It'll be a very brief, hectic ride. So I think most entrepreneurs will look back and acknowledge where mistakes were made. I'm certainly in that boat. We've, you know, set up the practice in Singapore in 2004, and I've expanded it into a number of countries, and realized that in some markets, the cross-border Australian way, in inverted commas, of doing tax and providing tax services wasn't going to work. But that's a mistake that you make once or twice, and then you realize you've got to change tack. Certainly, I've seen clients roll into the US and assume that an LA business culture equates to a New York business culture or a Georgia business culture, and think that a model which might work on the West Coast is going to work on the East Coast. and obviously it doesn't. So, you know, if they accept that they're going to need twice the capital and take twice as long, that's probably a good rule of thumb. So I think adapting to failure and recovering from temporary setbacks is absolutely essential for any entrepreneur, because until you get there, no matter how many books you read, you don't really know your customer, you don't really know the business environment, and you can watch YouTube as much as you like, you're not there. So I think failure, having done it a number of times, and you know, being on pretty good terms with it, I think resilience is where I've got to go. Bern, you would agree?
Yeah, absolutely. You've just got to stick in there and keep going. You know, as I said previously, you know, if you really believe and have a passion for what you do, then you know, some people are going to understand your value proposition straight away. Others never will. And you learn and you take on the feedback and adapt as necessary. You know, I've seen clients come in and come across from a different provider, but it was very clear that their mindset in terms of how the local Singaporean tax system should work was identical to that of their home jurisdiction in the UK. And I was like, well, okay, I understand that's what you're used to in the UK, but this is Singapore, right? And there's different ways of doing GST. This was all about GST registration. And they were, you know, so they were confused as to why something they would normally do in the UK didn't work here in Singapore. And so I had to politely say, look, it's a different market, right? You're in a different jurisdiction with different regulations and different business norms and approaches. So yeah, resilience is a key to survival in an entrepreneur world, right? It's not just about building the story, it's about building the story, selling the story in a market that you've never been in and learning how to adapt to that market as you go along.
But I think there's also another point which has to be said, and that is there's a difference between resilience and stupidity. So if it's clear that something isn't working and the rugged entrepreneur wants to ruggedly drive the car over the cliff, there'll be plenty of cliffs to accommodate him or her. So you've got to keep your ears open, and if going, you know, route one straight down the middle isn't working, then you've got to adjust and look at, if you don't have competitors because you're in a unique position, then you've got to try and figure out how you might alter your approach yourself. If you do have competitors, what are they doing and why is it working for them and why isn't it working for you? So that flexibility and to adjust your operating process is very important. Resilience to keep going, not resilience by being stubborn and just continuing to carry on as you were, because that's a fast way to bankruptcy.
Great. Well, I think that's a great place to close off for today. But part two will be released next Wednesday, where we will discuss John and Boone's personal business experiences in a bit more depth, as well as share some invaluable wisdom on how to make a success of going it alone in the accountancy world, and even throw a few laughs in there while we're at it. I know that these guys have got great chemistry, so looking forward to carrying on that discussion next week. If you'd like to read the report we've been discussing, then you'll find the link in this podcast description, as always. And we, you know, we really can't stress enough that it is an invaluable resource for those looking to expand or move their business overseas. And join us all again next week to continue the conversation. See you soon. You won't want to miss it.